And joining us now on the KYMN Morning Show by phone from St. Paul, the state capital, it's Christy Purcell, representative for District 58A. Good morning, Christy. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Jeff. I've got some of the spring crud that's going around, so forgive my having a cold voice this morning.
Welcome to the land of politics. You've got to work anyway, even though
I'll have some time this weekend to rest up, and then midweek next week we get a legislative break.
So all right,
some resting is coming up.
Good. Let's talk about this week. You know, last week when we talked to you, you said this is going to be an important and very busy week because it's the first deadline of the legislative session where bills would be introduced and into committees right now. And this is the last chance for the legislators to do that. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, something like that. And it's a combined first and second deadline, which I'm still trying to wrap my head around what exactly that all means, but there's been extra committees, including this morning, in just over an hour, I have Environment and Natural Resources extra committee this morning.
And what is that going to be on? I know you have like an environmental impact bill that you've been working on, you've talked about a little bit. Is that part of what's going on this morning, or is that separate?
I believe this is more of like the omnibus bill, so where we kind of combine bills that we've already heard.
Okay.
So that they make deadline. But when the Environment Committee met earlier this week, I presented a bill about an environmental impact statement needing to be done for proposed projects that have 10,000 or more animal units. So right now that would only apply to basically these mega dairies that we're seeing predominantly in kind of southwest Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, if there's a proposed dairy for 1,000 head or 1,000 animal units, it all has to do with how much waste is produced.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go through the same level of environmental scrutiny as a project literally 100 times the size of a 10,000 animal unit. So, an environmental impact statement can be requested and can be done on these projects, but the bill that I presented earlier this week, and we had a very robust and very interesting discussion on, says that if you're 10,000 or more animal units, that just sort of triggers, you have to do this environmental impact statement, which is just a longer, more in-depth, that looks at water use, it looks at waste, it looks at impact on the community. It sometimes does take years to do that versus an environmental assessment worksheet, which is sort of the initial assessment. And one of my colleagues made this great point, like, you know, if you're building U.S. Bank Stadium, there's a lot more assessments that have to be done versus if you're building a single-family home. And I think that's right. I mean, we're talking about an incredible scale of magnitude. And so I think it's sort of a common sense. Folks want to know how this might impact their aquifers. And we've seen that happen with some of these mega dairies, is that there was not enough water to feed the animals. And then there's really a lot of questions around the waste. So that was a very robust discussion, as we like to say up here, and that's available to watch on YouTube as a standalone video itself.
Now, you those large operations, 10,000, wow, 10,000 animals, kind of hard to wrap your head around how many barns mm-hmm. they have and what is going on with that. But this, if you have one in place and have been working on it, you'd cited a couple examples of some issues that have arisen from that. Will this affect the current 10,000 plus farmers out there, or is this just all in the future?
Yes, this does not impact. So we have 9 operations of this size that already are in existence here in Minnesota. This only will trigger if those operations want to or if any operation wants to expand 1,000 animal units or more, or if there's a brand new site that's being proposed.
All right.
So the cat's already out of the bag for these 9 operations that we already currently have.
All right. We talked, I think last week or the week before, about radon in rental houses. There has been a case that has come to the surface recently of people trying to get out of their lease and not able to do that even after getting radon poisoning from the place that they're renting. Is that bill, did that make it through yet?
So I was able to present that bill in the Housing Committee this year. That's a new committee. I've never been. I don't sit on the Housing Committee, and I know housing is a big issue in our community as well as across the state, so I got to present this bill to the Housing Committee this week, and because of timing, we had to take out the penalties for rental owners who know about radon in their buildings, and they rent the unit anyway, so I imagine I'll keep working on this next year, but this time around, the bill just says, basically, if there's radon in a unit that you are renting, you can get out of your lease. And there's some details to work out because you can go to Home Depot and buy a radon test. You can, you know, have a professional assessment and then who pays for that. But there is the case of a student in Moorhead, which is why the Senator Rob Kupek, who represents Moorhead, brought this bill to me. And I actually was in touch with the student. We couldn't have him testify remotely into the meeting, but I got to share his story that it's for this school year. He has a lease. He's still in lease, and he did a radon test in his basement bedroom, and the levels were incredibly high. And basically, I knew almost nothing about radon before I agreed to author this bill in the House. And so I've just been using this as an opportunity to do a PSA and say, the American Lung Association weighed in. There's like thousands and thousands and thousands of deaths every year that come from this radioactive, odorless gas. And it has to do with the bedrock underneath your home. So one, you know, home or building might have radon in it, and then literally the one next door may not. And there's ways to mitigate the radon. You can't just open a window. Sometimes that makes it worse. But there's thousands and thousands of people who die from lung cancer who are non-smokers, and the best bet is that it's from radon poisoning. And so, you know, I'm going to go. I have a newer home that I'm renting, so I'm going to pick up just an at-home radon test to just do the very basics. You know, what's happening in my home where my kids and I sleep, because it's almost impossible without one of those tests and ideally with the professional assessment to know if you are just breathing in this gas. So the bill at least lets Milton get out of his lease. Now his lease will be up in just a couple of months, but for future tenants and renters that if radon is found, they can at least get out of there, get their families out of there.
All right. So this just allows them, the bill in specific allows them to get out of their lease, but it does, yeah. Does it have some type of punishment or some type of, you know, repercussions for the homeowner, the landlord? Do they have to fix this? Do they get penalized? Does it address any of that or yet?
I imagine next year we will address the penalty question. Right now, it gives them, I think, a frame of time to mitigate and fix the problem. But right now, because of the shortness of our session and the way things work at the Capitol, I would have to bring this bill to the Judiciary Committee, the Health Committee, and because today is the deadline, we just don't have time for those stops. So I kind of made a promise to the Housing Committee, like, well, you may see me again next year, you know, trying again with this, with ample time to get to those other pieces so that there's a legal, you know, step for the building owner and repercussions for them. But right now, basically, we just don't, and with the part-time legislature, it was a 15-week session this year. We just don't have time. So
all right,
this is what I feel like is the first step.
We're talking with State Representative Christy Purcell from District 58A. She's talking to us live from the state capitol or from somewhere in St. Paul. Let's take a look at next week. You know, next week is going to be interesting. You mentioned you have a few days of work and then you get a break, you know, for the Easter break or spring break. But are you going to have to stay up there the whole time? We've got some weather coming in. It's going to be snowy and messy. Has there been any talk about how next week is going to happen among the legislators?
Well, it was reiterated to us that the governor gets to decide if there's a snow day for the executive branch, but it is up to the Speaker of the House that decides for us. And she basically said, get your butts to St. Paul on Sunday, people, because we only have 3 days of work next week and we need to be conducting that business. So I have been in touch with the Speaker's office to see if perhaps she can help me pay for a hotel room in St. Paul Sunday, maybe Monday night. So that's sort of my hope and my plan, because we have been told, you're going to need to come to work, people, so figure it out. Because last year she declared a snow day, and my friends in northern Minnesota, you know, they didn't even get the snow, and then the snow did not accumulate as was predicted for southern Minnesota. So I think she's a little gun-shy about doing that. And, again, as I mentioned, part-time legislature. We only have 15 weeks of the session. And then we do have, because this year, Passover, Easter, and Eid all fell, they fall at different times. And I have colleagues who are Christian, Jewish, Muslim. So we actually have like three different breaks. I mean, essentially they're long weekends. But so because we want to let people observe the Easter break, she's telling us, get your butts to St. Paul. So now that it's technically spring, we're getting our winter, because we didn't have winter during winter. So, you know, Minnesota weather just keeps you guessing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Is there anything in particular you'll be working on next week, or the legislative session? Is there any more deadlines or anything coming up this week, or is it business as usual?
I mean, I'm actually a little bit curious, because I still don't completely understand this deadline business. I know that it's a policy deadline that we have today, and there's still finance deadline that's coming up towards the end of April, but we keep waiting for each committee will get kind of a target number. The budget, the governor's budget came out on Monday this week, saying, you know, how much he wishes to spend in the different areas. And I know the leadership in our chamber, and I assume the leadership over in the Senate, is deciding their own budget targets. So once we have those, to just have supplemental funds to, you know, kind of finish the business that we did last week, talking with Superintendent Hillman and my other school districts about, well, if we're going to actually implement the READ Act, we need some stipends for teachers to take time off to get that training, and trying to provide some supplemental funds to school districts to do that. But we don't have those targets yet. So I think, once we hit this policy deadline, once we have some finance targets, then I think hopefully the committees can finish up their business with some dollar amounts that are agreed upon. So I think that's sort of coming up next, which is why no snow day for us.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you so much for taking a few minutes and being with us. Much appreciated. And we'll talk to you next week. Have a good week.
Okay, thank you. I will probably not talk to you next week because it's our break, but I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good.